We're holding at the beginning of the Gemara and some Chalach from an Aleph, but right after the Mishnah. So the Mishnah told us that you have two different cases. You have a case where a person is suspect of being over on the Dinim Shemitah. We said you're allowed to lend them things like a sieve or a sifter or whatever, but you're not allowed to actually do any of the work of preparing the grain picking out the dirt or grinding or whatever with her, because that would be directly helping her do an Avera. Then we have the second case in the Mishnah was that you have an Amor, a wife of an Amoret, who's not careful with Tumor Tahara and Tumor and Meiser. So a wife of a Chaver is allowed, again, to lend her kitchen utensils, and she is allowed to do some of the kitchen work with her, like picking out the pebbles and grinding and sifting. But once you put the water in, which at that point it becomes Moksha L'Kabel Tumor, it's able to become Tumor, at that point you have to stop working with her, because that would, so she has to stop working with her. The Gemara starts by asking, what's the difference that in the first case, what's the difference that in the first case where it's involving Shemitah, where it's involving that she may be violating Shemitah, then we say you're not even allowed to do any of the work in the kitchen with her, whereas the second case involving Challah, you're allowed to do some of the kitchen work with her. So Abai says, the fact is, most Amei Oret do take Meiser. So yes, there is the possibility that this grain that you're working with.
We're talking about Challah, and in general, Truma and Meiser.
So Abaya says, most Amei Oret do take Meiser. So therefore, odds are that this grain has had proper Truma and Meiser taken from it, and therefore, there's no problem working with her at the beginning of it, only with Nedake Sholem. But when Chashuda al Shvius, when you have somebody who's suspect of violating Shemitah, then you can't do anything with them, because then you have the whole point is we specifically suspect this person of violating Shemitah.
Why doesn't he then take
that's what we're saying. Therefore, so in the case of the Shemitah, you can't do any of the kitchen work with her, because that would be Misayeya, that would be helping them to do an Avera.
Right.
Whereas in the case with the dough, odds are that Meiser was taken. You're not helping them with something which is tevel. It's probably not tevel. It's only a chashash de rabbanon that it's not, and therefore for that, the chashash de rabbanon is not going to take away anything. Dr. Shalom, we're going to override it and allow you to work with her. Rava Amar. Rava says no. Chachabama Aretz did a mayor. No, what we're actually talking about over here is Rav Meir's definition of an Amar Aretz, which the Gemara is going to quote in a second. And Betum of Atara did a rabbanon. So Rava says, in other words, that no, it is true, we know Rava, Tosfos says, Rava agrees that most Amei Oret do take Meiser. Nevertheless, we can't use that as a basis for saying that probably Meiser was taken. The fact of the matter is, there is a significant minority of Amei Oret who don't take Meiser, and we do have to be concerned about that. However,
Rosh name is?
Rav Meir. However, he says that, so therefore he says that, we're not talking about somebody who we don't know whether they take Meiser or not, and we just want to use the majority. No, we're talking about we know this person takes Meiser. So what's the problem? The problem is that they are not careful about Tumah V'Tahara. And we're not yet worried about Tumah V'Tahara on a Daraisa level, because then it's true, you can't help them with it anyway. We're only talking on a Darabana level, meaning when it's Chulin. The Tanya, as we learn in the Braisa, Ezehu Amoret, what is considered an Amoret? Rav Meir says it's somebody who does not eat chulin, which is tahor. He doesn't care whether it's chulin or tahor or tameh. The chachamim say anybody who doesn't take meiser from his produce. So according to Rav Meir, a person can be considered an amoret even though we know for a fact they take meiser. But if he's not careful with tumah v'tahara and chulin, he's still considered an amoret. So therefore, what we're saying is over here that so there's no issur d'oraisa involved here according to Rav Meir. Truma and meiser was taken. The fact that it's chulin, which is going to become tomei, is only also midrabanan to eat it. Therefore, there's no problem helping her with that, even though Rashi evidently is assuming that the different portion learn the Gemara in a little bit different ways, but Rashi is assuming that the situation over here is that the produce, the grain, for example, has already become wet at some point. So it's already able to become tomei. So therefore, when you're working on it with her, when you're working with her on making this dough, before it gets to the point of grinding, when you're getting to the point of grinding or sifting or what have you, it's already moksha l'kabel tumah, but it's only chulin at that point. It's chulin that challah has not been taken from yet. It's chulin that's chulin m'challah. But
would it be different if it's challah?
That's the difference. Once you put it in the water, at that point is when it becomes chayiv and challah. At that point, you're metameh challah, is something that's something else. That's an issa d'oraisa. Then you can't override that and pick out the shalom. Rather is saying, but when it's only an issue of cholin that are tame, that you can ignore because of dafka shalom. You might ask, well, Mishkatani say from Mishatatim with a Mayim Latigayim. Why? The end of the Mishnah says that the continuation of the Mishnah rather says that once you put in the water, then the Ashes Chavar can't work together with the Ashes Amaris anymore. Which at that point we know obviously it's a matter of Tumah V'Tahara. Recall the Reish Alav B'Tumah V'Tahara, which implies that previously we're not talking about an issue of Tumah V'Tahara. Because we're not talking about that it was Mukhtar L'Kabal Tumah before. We're assuming that up till now, let's assume that the grain up until now was dry, but therefore there's no problem, evidently there's no problem of Tumah V'Tahara, even if the Eishes HaMa'aretz is Tameh, there won't be a problem of Tumah V'Tahara, because it can't become Tameh anyway, as long as it didn't become wet. And we're saying only once water touches it, it's Mukhtar L'Kabal Tumah, is there a problem, implying that earlier in the Mishnah, the problem must be something else, the pashtus, the problem of Meiser. So how can Rava say that? We're talking about somebody who we know takes Meiser. The answer is Reisha B'Seif of the Tumah V'Tahara. No, both parts are talking, there's an issue of Tumah V'Tahara. Reisha B'Tumah Chulin B'Seif of the Tumah Schala. However, no, let's go back to the assumption that we are talking about fruit that's Mukhtar L'Kabal Tumah. The difference is, before the dough has been put together, before you put the water into the flour, it's only a matter of Chulin. It's only Chulin at that point. No, it is Mukhtar L'Kabal Tumah because previously the grain has been soaked, or the grain has been, you know, very often when they want to make fine flour, even nowadays they wash the grain first in order to get the husks and bran and whatever off it. So it may well have become wet. Yes, it is true when the Eishes HaMa'aretz is touching this grain and this flour, it becomes tummy. But we're not worried about that at that point. It's only according to Rabbah. It's only Chulin. It's only also to Rabbanan to make a tummy. But say, Dr. Shalom, we won't worry about that. On the other hand, the Sefer, is talking about when already it becomes Chayev and Chala, and the Eishes HaMa'aretz is going to be making this dough, where now, forget about Mukhtar L'Kabal Tumah, it's already Mukhtar L'Kabal Tumah, but now you're getting it to the point where it's Chayev and Chala is going to be taken out from it. Chala, you're not allowed to make Tumah. Therefore, the Eishes Chavar is not allowed to join in with it anymore. I have another contradiction. Braisa says, you are allowed to, if you have grain that you've already taken truma and meisa from, you are allowed to have it grinded. You're allowed to have it ground by something. Tochanin means you're allowed to have it ground. Or mafkidin, you're allowed to deposit it for safekeeping. By etzel ochli shvius, by people who are by people who eat shmita fruit. Again, like we said yesterday, that one possibility. Rashi had explained that when we said in our mission, if somebody is suspect about shmita, what do we mean? They're suspect that they're keeping the fruit, they're keeping the produce or whatever after the time of beer. Instead of going and being, according to Rashi, they're supposed to be destroying it, according to everybody else, they're supposed to be mocked to it, and then they can take it back. This person is not doing that. They're just going and pretending as though it was a regular year and just keeping it. Nevertheless, you're allowed to take grain that you had from Shemitah and bring it to such a person from a regular year, let's say. You're not worried that they're going to switch it. You're allowed to bring your grain to them to grind. You're not worried that they're going to switch it out with another batch of grain. And similarly, machkidin, you're allowed to deposit it with them for safekeeping. Same thing. But the other way around, you're not allowed to take grain that belongs to ochel shvius, people who are violating the dinim of shmita. You're not allowed to take their grain and grind it for them. And you're not allowed to have them deposit their grain or whatever, their produce, by you for safekeeping.
In the previous case, this was what?
The previous case was that you're taking your grain to Namaharet, to grain. No, it is somebody who's kosher on Shvius. You don't have to worry that they're going to switch out your grain, which is Mutter, with their grain, which is Osir. But on the other hand, you're not allowed to grind, you're not allowed to help them with their Aveda, which you would be doing by grinding their grain into flour or by keeping their stuff for safekeeping. Now, so what's the point? Our Mishnah had said that an Eishes Chavar can work together with an Eishes HaMa'aretz in grinding the grain we said, according to Rava, that the case is we have the problem is not as far as Shemitah, that was earlier in the Mishnah, but the problem as far as the second case with Amoritz, we know takes Meiser, but it's a matter of Chulin being Tomei, we're saying that you're allowed to grind the grain with them. So the Mishnah says you're allowed to. Why is the Bryce saying you're not allowed to help them grind their grain? Or is the Bryce saying the Tumah, if they're eating their fruit, the Tumah? According to the Rabbah, the whole point is that's only also did Rabbanan to make Chulin Tameh. It should be overridden with Pedakah Shalom. Why is the Bryce telling us you can't? And there we're not just talking about Yisrael, who is Chulin the Tumah, which would only be also Jabon. And there we're talking about a Koyan, the Braita is talking about a Koyan who is suspect of eating Truma when he's Tomei or when the Truma is Tomei. To have a little Truma Daraita, then it's an issue Daraita. You can't override that and pay Dr. Shalom. A Koyan, if I'm not eating Truma, a Koyan eating Truma, if he's Tomei and the Truma is, and if he's Tomei or the Truma is Tomei, is also Daraita. So that's what the Braita is talking about.
What is the Braita?
But that feature, because that's the difference. You're allowed to take your grain to grind by somebody, even though he's suspect of eating truma of a truma. You're not worried that he's going to swap out your grain with another batch, but you are not allowed to take his to grind it because you would be helping him with his avera.
And effectively, the coin is a derisive.
Yes.
So we're talking about a coin here. We're
So the our mission is talking about Yisrael. It's only a matter of Cholin.
Right.
The Braita is talking about a coin and truma.
What do we need brass of skills that you're not supposed to help a Kohen when it's an Yisrael or Raka?
Because that's the point. There's a difference between you're allowed to take your stuff to them, but they're not allowed. You're not allowed to have them bring your stuff to you, their stuff to you. It's a distinction that has to be made. The Gemara says, Ihochi makidin. In that case, then what do you mean that if you're talking about a Kohen that you're allowed, that there's a Kohen that you're allowed to deposit your own produce or your own truma, let's say, with him without worrying that he's going to swap it out? Or I have a contradiction. Another Braita says, "Makidin truma etzer Yisrael amaharet." You're allowed to. By the way, the previous answer was Abaya giving it, but he was giving the answer in order to explain Rava. Abaya himself doesn't need the answer. He wasn't explaining all Mishnah talking about Chulin anyway. But he was answering how. What would Rava say? Abaya is saying, "I myself don't have a problem with that Braita, but Rava has a problem with it. Here's how I explain it according to him." A Braita says, "Mafkidin truma etzer Yisrael amaharet." You're allowed to deposit for safekeeping. You're allowed to deposit truma by Yisrael, who's an amaharet. We're not worried that he's going to eat it because he knows that he's not used to handling truma. He knows not to touch it. Avaloy etzer koyin amaharet. We're not allowed to leave it with a koyin who's an amaharet. But he should live at gasba because he feels comfortable around it. He eats truma all the time anyway, so therefore he'll feel comfortable at least touching it. It's not eating it, but at least touching it and making it tummy. So what are you telling me if you're saying that the Braita that we just quoted, Tilfin and Maskidin, is talking about a Kohen who's an Amoret, then what do you mean you're allowed to deposit with him Truma? This last Braita that we just said says you're not allowed to. The answer is, yes, but you know what? The previous Braita, when we said that you're not allowed, that when we said that you're allowed to deposit it with him, means that it's in a container that's not able to become tummy. It's in a earthenware container that's sealed shut. Now, the din is, such a thing, even if it comes into a place where, even if it comes into an oil mess, even if it comes into a, even if such a container is placed in a place where there's a mess or some other kind of tumor, it won't, the contents won't become tummy.
And the keli?
The keli itself, klicheris can only become tummy from if the tumor goes into the inside of it.
Sealed.
So if it's sealed, then that keeps the tumor out. So therefore, so that's why you're allowed to be marked it, because it's true, this is a Kohen, he's comfortable around Truma, but in this case, even if he touches it, it doesn't matter, it's not going to make a tummy. Okay, the question is, yes, but don't we have a different problem? There is a din, we've mentioned it in a number of places, called a Hefet. A Zav, a Zava, a Nida, and a Yodas, that group of Tmeim. There's a special din with them called Hefet, which is that if they move something which is if they move something which is tahor, then they make it tahor, even without touching it. Even, for example, they take a stick and then move it. For example,
so another eater.
Right? Yes. Yeah. So now, why aren't we concerned that if you leave even a klicheret samukuf samet tzil can become tahor. Even if samukuf samet tzil can still become tahor with hesed. So why aren't we worried if you leave this Kli Cheres sealed in the house of an Amoret? What happens if his wife, when she's Nida, moves it and it'll become Tomei? Tosfos has a long discussion about the question. We do find in various places in Shas where we say that Amoret themselves are considered Tomei Zerabanan, are considered they have the Tumah of Zavim Zerabanan. Why aren't we worried that the Amoret himself touches it, or moves it? So Tosfos gives a couple of different answers. That one of them is that when we say an Amoret is Tomei as a Zav, we mean, for example, that Midrabanan, we say, for example, saliva, his urine, various other bodily fluids are considered Tomei as if they were Mashke HaZav, as if they came from an actual Zav. That's where way, way back in Shkolim a few years back, for example, we learned that most saliva that you find on the street is considered Tomei, because it may have come from a Zav or an Amoret or whatever. But to go so far, the Chacham didn't want to go so far as to say that if a Zav moves something, he's going to make a Tomei Behetet, because that would be a Zav that's impossible to keep. So necessarily, I mean, you deal every day with Amoret, so it would be unsupportable to Zera that any time he moves something, he's going to make a Tomei. So the Chacham, when they made the Zera, they didn't include that detail. Tosfos gives a couple of other possibilities. That no, Tosfos gives another answer from a motion with Pontoise, whatever, however it's pronounced in France. That he gives a different Pontois, I guess it's pronounced nowadays. I don't know, whatever. Yeah, he gives a different answer, which is we never said that Amoret themselves are considered zavim. We say their clothes are metame. Why? Because they're clothes. What if his wife sat on an edge of his clothes while she was knitting? She will have made them Tomei. Not that he himself, not that his clothes themselves are considered like the clothes of a Zav. Anyway, so back to our Gemara over here. So if we're saying that you're depositing a sealed container full of Truma with a Kohen Amoret, fine, we're not worried it's going to be in a place of Truma because it can't become Tomei. What if his wife moves it while she's in India? Elam Rav Yirmiyah like Kasha. So no, Rav Yirmiyah rather says there's a different way of answering the contradiction. Kan b'peiros shehukshru, kan b'peiros shelo hukshru. It depends. Have the peiros been mukshru l'kabel tumah yet or not? If they haven't, then gezun dehet, you can deposit them with a koyin. Because even though it's tumah, still, apparently we're not worried that he's going to eat it. We're only worried that he may touch it. Fine, if it's not mukshru l'kabel tumah, he can't make it tumah anyhow, no matter how much he touches it or he or his wife touches it. Whereas if it's Moksha, the Kabbal Tumah, you can't deposit it with him.
Assuming here that it's not.
So that's the difference between the two brises. Now, it's interesting that Rambam says you need both. In order to deposit Tumah with an Amoret, it has to be both, he learned. Yeah, it has to be not Moksha, the Kabbal Tumah, and it has to be inside a sealed container. And Mephoshim deal with the question that Ivad argues with him, and Mephoshim deal with the question why the Rambam says you need both if the Gemara seems to be saying it's one or the other. One possibility is it depends whether we learn. Again, it depends. Going back to this whole sugya is according to Rava. If we learn the Mishnah according to Abaya that the issue is not chulin b'tara, but rather the issue is did the person take ma'aseh, the eishes amoret take ma'aseh from this or not? Then this whole discussion comes out a little differently. Then you don't have to plan for the b'risus that way. Then you could say that you need both in order to. Okay. Then the Gemara says, okay, I have a contradiction from yet another b'risa. If somebody takes wheat to a grinder or a mill owner who's a kusi or an amaret, they still keep their same chazaka as far as meiser and as far as shvius, meaning we don't worry that the miller is the miller, that's the word for it. We don't worry that the miller is going to switch out your grain for somebody else's, which didn't have ma'aser taken from it, or which may have been illegally grown or kept during Shemitah. Ava lo l'tumah, but you do have to worry about as far as tumah. Not that he may swap it out, but that he may touch it in the course of grinding it or whatever. So we see then that so here we're saying that you do have to be worried about tumah. Before we were saying that you don't have to be worried about tumah. You can deposit grain with them and not have to worry about it becoming tummy. Says, "Hi, my Rumia." So, what's the problem? We just said that the difference is whether it's mukshel kabel tumah or not. If it's not mukshel kabel tumah, you can deposit it with him. If it's mukshel kabel tumah, then yes, you can't deposit it with him, and you also can't send it to him for grinding. Says, whoever brought up this question in the Midrash, what was he thinking? What did he bring it in the first place? Well, my Kaori law, why did he bring it in the first place? Didn't he realize that we've already answered it? The answer is, Mishum Kaboy Lamir Me'achriti Allah. Really, he only brought in this Mishnah about Hamor L'Chitin because he wanted to point out a contradiction from another Braisa against it, or from another Mishnah, rather, against it. Another Mishnah later on in the second Mishnah. Mirmi, in order to make a Rumi, in order to point out a contradiction. He wasn't bringing, in other words, what we're saying is that we're sort of starting now in a new sub-discussion within the discussion. We're not trying to point out that this Mishnah contradicts what we said before. Fine, we can say that the Mishnah is talking about where the wheat has already been Mukhshar Kabbal Tumma. However, we seem to have a contradiction between that and another Mishnah later on in Masechta Dmai, in the same parak, actually, namely, that our Mishnah that we just quoted said that you can assume they have the same chazaka as far as ma'aser and as far as shviyas, meaning you don't have to worry that he switched them out with other grain that ma'aser was not taken or that was kept after the time of beer during Shemitah. The question is, so you're telling me that we're not worried that the miller is going to switch it out? I have a contradiction. Two Mishnayos later in Masechta Dmai, it says, if you have a chaver who's careful, again, he's careful with the dinim of Maisa, Tumah Matara, Shvius, etc., his mother-in-law, though, is an Amoret. So, Hanoisim Chamoisei, if he gives food, for example, Rashi gives an example, he gives her dough to bake for him. Ma'aser Eshru Noisim, or the Eshru Noisim, I mean, what he has to do is he has to take Maisa from the dough before he gives it to her. And again, when she gives it back to him, he has to take Maisa again. Because we have to suspect that she may switch it out for another batch of dough. So you see, you're giving something to an Amoret, in this case his mother-in-law, and you're worried about that she may switch it out. So why aren't we concerned with the miller that he may switch it? The answer is, that's the answer. Because we suspect, and I left out a word, because we suspect that she may switch out something that is ruined. Meaning, what happens if his dough goes bad? She may go and swatch and switch it out for another batch of for a fresh batch of dough. That fresh batch of dough comes from the house of an Amoret. Ma'aser may not have been taken from it. Therefore, when you get it back, you have to take Ma'aser to be on the safe side. So you see that you see that she switches out. So why aren't we worried with a miller that he might do the same thing? Your grain went bad, let's say, and he's going to switch it out. The answer is Hossam Katani Daima. The reason there is because actually the Mishnah continues with the reason. Omer of Yehuda, Roisahi Betakonas Bita, because what happens is in the case of a mother-in-law, she's not trying to do it in order to make things bad for him. Adarabha, she's trying to do it good. Roisahi Betakonas Bita, she wants to make things good for her daughter. My son-in-law brought me a batch of dough, but it's no good. So I'm going to do my daughter a favor and switch it out for a fresh batch. And she's embarrassed to tell her son-in-law, you brought me bad dough. So therefore, in that case, then she might switch it out. Not in the case when you bring grain to a miller, we're not worried that he's going to do that. The question is, well, I'm a loy chashin, and fine.
Very unusual.
No, but that's what we're saying. It is unusual. Fine, but it's not just the case of a dough. It could be anything. He brings her a cholum to cook or whatever, and it turns out that, you know, whatever. Okay. The question is, well, fine, you're telling me then that we're not worried about, you're saying that only in the case of a mother-in-law are we worried that it might be switched out. Yeah. You're telling me that another person in general, you're not worried? But we have another Mishnah, also in the Sefer Dmai. If somebody gives grain to an innkeeper, to a woman innkeeper, so we're talking a case that the Talmud Chacham is away living in yeshiva, he's boarding by a family in Amoret, and he has the innkeeper, among other things, he prepares a batch of dough, and she takes it and bakes it for him. Ma'aser is true noisim, love that's true noisim. And the same thing, he has to take ma'aser from it before he gives it to her, in order that, and with the previous case, the reason is, he has to take ma'aser beforehand, because just in case it gets switched out, you don't want to cause that the other person, the Amoret, is going to end up eating something which ma'aser hasn't been taken from. You have to take ma'aser before you get it, that's true noisim, and you have to take ma'aser again when you get it back, again, because she may switch it. So you see, even you're not talking about a relative, you're just talking about the innkeeper who you're boarding by, and you're still saying that you're worried that they may switch it out. Not necessarily. Maybe, maybe not. The answer is hasam modia the amra. Yes, but the difference is that she may be modia, she may decide for herself that it's the right thing to do. Rashi says, let's learn what she thinks, and then we'll understand. Rashi and Tosfos learn what modia means differently. She's going to think like this. V'amra, she says, ba'avei rav lecho chamima, she may think, you know what, this young Talmid Chacham who is boarding by us, let him eat the hot stuff, and I'll eat the cold stuff. Meaning she figures after a couple of days that, you know what, the bread is going to be stale, the dish is going to be, it's going to be a couple of days old, it's not going to be hot and fresh anymore. So you know what, I'll do him a favor, I'll exchange out the old stuff, and I'll keep that for myself, and he can have the new stuff. So therefore, so now she says Maria means she thinks it's a mitzvah to do that. She doesn't realize, meanwhile, that she may cause him unwittingly to eat food, to eat produce, or whatever, grain or whatever it is, that mitzvah has not been taken from. Therefore, yes, in that case, you have to worry that she may switch it out, and therefore you have to take mitzvah from it when you get it back. That's the point. In other words, when you get it back from her, you have to be concerned that it may be demise, because she's an Amara. Then you have to take mitzvah from it to be on the safe side, yes. Tosfos learns the word moria differently. Moria usually, Tosfos says, doesn't mean that somebody thinks that somebody thinks it's a mitzvah to do. It means somebody thinks, you know what, I have an excuse. I have an excuse to make things better for myself. So Tosfos explains the other way around, that she thinks to herself, why should he get the hot, fresh stuff and I should be left with the cold stuff? I'm working for him. I'm doing the hard work. I'm baking the dough and cooking the stuff or whatever. That's the kind of case where we were concerned she may swap it out. As opposed to when you're going back to the case, when you take grain to a miller, you're paying him for it. That's his day job. He's not going to all of a sudden think, you know what, I'd rather have the fresher stuff. According to Tosfos, the word moria means that she's going to think, I have an excuse. Why should he get the fresh stuff and I should get the old stuff when I'm working for him? I'm the one cooking him his food. I should be getting the fresh stuff. And that's why she's going to swap it out. Not like Rashi, that I respect him as a Talmid Chacham, I want him to have the best. No, on the contrary, I want to have the best for myself. And then she's going to swap it out. So she'll swap it out with stuff for that she made a day or two earlier. So then, either way, the point is, it comes out the same thing. She may be giving him stuff that originally came from her pantry, which Meiser has not been taken from. It's nice. Therefore, the Talmid Chacham, when he gets it back, is going to have to take Meiser from it.
They're eating
in
her house.
This Babi Rav, when he's boarded by her, he's not eating his meals by their table necessarily. He has his own food. We see it in this case. He's providing his own food. He's providing his own dough or whatever. He just needs a place to hang his hat to sleep. And also that she cooks his food for him. We're not worried about kashrus. We're worried about matters involving truma, meiser, maybe shvius if she's kosher, whatever. But Akati, okay, still, even after all of that, are you telling me then that, like in the case of the miller, we're not worried about somebody unrelated and who you don't have any ongoing relationship with, like an innkeeper, we're not worried that they're going to switch it out? Well, Tanya, we have a braisa that says, Eishes chaver techenes and eishes hamaharif, bizman sheitzmeya. The wife of a chaver is allowed to grind grain together with the wife of an hamaharif when she's tamei. Rashi learns that she means the Eishes Chaver. There's times when the Eishes Chaver herself is tummy, when she's nida, when she's just given birth, whatever it is, when at that time she knows, at times like that, she knows she can't touch anything that's taharis anyway. So therefore, we're not worried that she may eat some of it. Techenes, she's allowed to help her grind the grain, bizman sheitmei, when the Eishes Chaver herself is tummy. Because she knows then that Tahara is off limits to her. Ava loiv is man she Tahara, but not when she's Tahara. Because when she's Tahara, she thinks she's not going to realize that, nevertheless, the grain has become Tomei by the Eishes Hamaharis is touching it. She may accidentally eat some of it. And then she's eating something that Meiser hasn't been taken, or she's eating Challah or whatever it is. Even when she's tummy, she's not allowed to help her grind. Because her friend, the Eishes Hamaharis, will give her some of it. So now Rashi learns, so then the question is, Hashta Mignav Ganva. So what are you saying then? This Eshes HaMa'aretz is ready to steal from what belongs to her husband. This grain that's grinding, the Pashtus belongs to her husband, and yet Rav Yossi is saying, and not Rav Yossi, Rav Shimon Elazar is saying that she's apt to take some of that, that they're working with, and give it to her friend to eat. On the face of it, I mean, it's a small amount of stealing, but on the face of it, it's still stealing. So Hashta got Mignav Ganva. So if we suspect that she may steal Chalufa Le Michlufa, or shouldn't we also suspect that she may switch it out? So there you see that even you're not talking about somebody who you have any ongoing relationship with, and still they may switch out one batch for another. Oh, but even if it tastes all right. Now, so that's how Rashi learns. That Tosfos learns differently. That it's the other way around. We're talking about that the Eishes Chaver is allowed to work with the Eishes HaMa'aretz when she, meaning the Eishes HaMa'aretz, is Tomei, meaning when the Eishes HaMa'aretz knows that she's Tomei, not when she's Tahor, meaning not at a time when the Eishes HaMa'aretz thinks I'm Tahor, not realizing that since she's not following the dinim of Tumah V'Tahara carefully, she really is still Tomei.
Amaretz also
says, well, yeah, the general definition of Amaretz is somebody who is not careful in all the dinim of Tumah V'Tahara. So there's a time when she knows she's Tomei. There's a time, for example, when she's Nida and hasn't yet gone to the mikveh, she knows she's Tomei. But then there's times when she thinks that she's Tahor. The difference is, Tosfos says, when the Eishes HaMa'aretz knows she's Tomei, then fine, she's going to be careful not to touch anything that could become Tomei.
Being an
Amaretz. Yeah, so what we're talking over here about Tosfos, according to Tosfos, is it's the other way around. So that's the thing. Rashi learns that the situation we're talking about over here is the grain that they're grinding belongs to the Amaretz. The Eishes Chaver is helping the Eishes HaMa'aretz grind her own grain. So therefore, what we're worried is, according to the Tanakhama, when the Eishes Chaver is Tahor, we're worried that she may accidentally take some of it to eat herself. And according to Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, even when the Eishes Chaver is Tomei, we're afraid that the Eishes HaMa'aretz may take some of it and give it to her. According to Tosfos, it's completely the other way around. The grain we're talking about over here belongs to the Chaver. The Eishes Chaver is busy grinding it. She has her friend and Eishes HaMa'aretz help her grind it. If the Eishes HaMa'aretz is Tomei, she's going to know, I know this belongs to a Chaver, it's off limits to me to touch, therefore I better not touch it. If she thinks she's Tahor, for example, I just went to a mikvah, I should be Tahor, not realizing that there's many other dinim of Tumah V'Tahara that she's not careful with, she may touch it and make it Tomei. And then Shimon Elazar comes in and says that even when the Eishes HaMa'aretz herself knows that she's Tomei, what's going to happen is that she may think that she may think that she's Tahor, and then she'll give her some of it and she'll eat it. So then we'll say, so then the stealing, meaning in other words, that the Eishes HaMa'aretz is taking some of it to eat, even though, never mind, according to Rashi, that it belongs to the Eishes HaMa'aretz's husband, fine, maybe not a big deal to take a little bit from what belongs to your husband to eat while you're working, but if it belongs to the Eishes Chaver, what are you doing taking from it? It's not yours to take from. So that's the question then that you want to ask. If she's suspect at that point, according to Shimon Elazar, of taking some of it, even though it doesn't even belong to her, how much more so we should suspect that she'll swap it out for another batch if she has the opportunity to?
When they both
Tomei. According to the Tanakhama, that would be fine. Because when they're both Tomei, then they know. Then they know it's gonna be Tomei anyway. There's no getting around it. Amr Yosef, Hasam Nami, Moriva Amra. Yes, but the difference is that in that case also, the Eishes HaMa'aretz will come up with a heter for herself. Again, Moria, here Rashi apparently learns like the same way as Tosfos did before, that Moria means that she'll come up with a heter for herself. Not before, like we said, that she thinks she's doing a mitzvah, but rather I'm going to come up with an excuse to make things better for myself. She's going to think, the Amra, she's going to think, Torah Megishe Ka'achel. Look, after all, the Torah tells us that an ox, when it's threshing, has to be allowed to eat some of the grain, that's or whatever, the stuff that's working on. A person is no less than that. So yes, if we're working on this stuff, we should be able to eat from it. And therefore, she's not going to think of it as stealing. Now, before she points out, she has a point, doesn't she? Isn't the halacha that when workers, the Gemara talks about it extensively in Bava Metzia, that when a worker is working in a field, they do have the right to eat from the produce while they're working. So what's the problem over here? A few different answers that Mepharshim give. One of them Marsha talks about is that the Gemara tells us, the Mishnah and the Gemara tell us over there, that this only, if you have something which is not, if you have something like grain, which challah is supposed to be taken from, then yes, as long as it's not up to the point where it's chayev and challah, namely when you mix the flour and water together, then you're still allowed to eat from it. But if it's something that's not subject to kala, then it becomes then the worker is no longer
subject.
That's not subject to kala. If it's something that is subject to kala, like wheat or barley, then until even after you ground it, even after you ground in the flour, until you actually put water into it, which is the point at which it becomes chayav and kala, up till that point you are allowed to eat from it while you're working. On the other hand, if it's something else, if it's grapes or olives or apples or what have you, where there's no challah involved, then as soon as the work that has to be done to make it chayav and meiser is finished, you're not allowed to eat from it anymore. Here, then, we're talking about grinding. We're not talking about grain necessarily. We're talking about some other kind of thing. So by now, it's already been whatever the process, whatever stage in the processing has been reached, at which point it becomes chayav and meiser. At that point, you're not allowed to eat from it anymore while you're working on it. So the Eishes HaMa'aretz makes the mistake of thinking that we're still allowed to eat from it, not realizing that heter has expired once it became chayav and meiser. And that's what we're dealing with over here, yeah. What about it? I mean, when we say chayiv and meiser, we mean in truma as well. Truma and meiser becomes chayiv at the same time. But the bikurim, we learned earlier in the sech that we had a short sugya about bikurim. For one thing, we mentioned over there that if you don't bring bikurim, the food is still allowed to eat. There's no such thing as tevel relative to bikurim, only relative to truma and meiser and challah. So bikurim wasn't taken.
You're allowed to eat.
You're not allowed to eat bikurim. You're allowed to eat from the produce, even if bikurim have not been brought from it. You're not supposed. It's not the right thing to do, but you're not over on anything. But,
you're right.
Yeah. But besides which, also, we never say that Amei Ha'aretz are careless with Bikurim. We know they're careful with Truma. I don't know whether it says anywhere one way or the other that whether we say they're careless with Bikurim. But again, it's neither here nor there because it's an after the produce anyway. But Bikurim, I mean, they made such a public spectacle. They made a whole procession out of it. The Pashtus Amei Ha'aretz joined with it as well, yeah. Going back now to the now we've reached a point we've established we have a way of explaining all these various Mishnayos and Braisos according to Rava. In general, we're not worried that an Ama'aretz is going to swap out what you give him, unless so again we have certain cases. We have if you give truma to a kohen where it's Mukhshel Kabel truma, he may touch it. Or if it's in a non-sealed container, his wife may make it. She may move it and make it tummy. If you have somebody like a mother-in-law or an innkeeper or whatever, somebody who thinks they can find a heter for themselves to take it, then they may. Otherwise, you don't have to worry about it. And that's why, for example, you're allowed to take a sealed container where it's not mukshel b'kabel truma, or according to the Rambam both, or take grain to a miller, which hasn't been mukshel b'kabel truma, to grind it, and you don't have to worry that what you get back is going to be gemai or tevel.
And that's a lot.
Yeah, well, that's how Rava holds. I mean, usually we say that the halacha is like Rava against Abaya. I'm not sure in this case. I think the Rambam just brings down the Mishnah that more or less Kitzurasa. I don't think the Rambam goes into. I don't think he goes into the details of what exactly the Ama'aret is choshed on or not. I don't know. I mean, generally, we do say roi v'amei oris ma'ashrenhein, that most amei oris do take ma'aser, so in that case, then, that would seem that we would go according to Abaye in this, but I don't know. Well, it says, Heid Rabbi Yossi ben HaMashulam Meshul Rabbi Yechanan. Rabbi Yossi ben HaMashulam said Eidus in the name of Rabbi Yechanan. Rabbi Yonathan, it says on the side, or Rabbi Nassim. Och, Meshul Rabbi Yechanan, or whatever, Ochiv, his brother, Sha'ama Meshul Rabbi Lazar ben Chisma, who said in the name of Rabbi Lazar ben Chisma, that in osin chalas ama oris betara, that if you have, so now suppose you have, again, apparently the idea was people didn't always make their dough themselves or bake it themselves. We said before that there's a chover, for example, makes dough and brings it to the eishes ama oris to bake. There could also be, there were professional bakers, not professional bakers, but professional kneaders that they had in those days. So you could have, you prepare a batch of dough, and then, for example, you take it to somebody else and say, please take challah out of it for me. Especially, for example, you may have an Ama'aretz who knows that there's problems with Tumah V'Tahara, but he doesn't know all the details, so he's not careful with them. He knows the challah has to be kept tahar, and therefore he will go to a, so he may go to a gabal, to a kneader, who's a chaver. So Ein osin chalas ama oretz betara. You cannot, you're not allowed to make the chalav an ama oretz betara. Meaning, again, an ama oretz comes with a batch of dough to a kneader who's a chaver and says, here's my batch of dough, take challah out of it. Don't do that. Because the whole dough has already become tamei anyway, necessarily. You put water into it, it became mukshel lekabel turma, and the ama oretz was tamei anyway. The ama oretz. He's waiting for the gabel to take challah from it. He doesn't realize it's tamei at that point. He thinks, I know I'm not allowed to be matamei challah, so therefore I'll bring it to the chaver and let him take challah out of it, not realizing it's already tamei. Aval oisin isas chol of batara, but you are allowed, the chaver is allowed to l'chatchila make the dough, to begin with, that for the tara
before it was,
so in other words, you take the flour from the amaret and mix it with water yourself. But yeah, then you can take the portion of it that's supposed to be challah. You put it into a kfisha or an anchusa. Rashi says that these are kalim. Rashi says they're for example they're worn out leather flasks. So they're not something that you would usually put dough in, and they're not makabel tumah because they're already worn out. Tosfos learns differently. Tosfos says that they're flat wooden kalim. They're not makabel tumah. Whatever it is, you take the challah and put it in or on one of these things. Then when amaret comes to pick up his dough, notel shtei, and he can take both of them. The kneader does not have to worry that the amaret is going to touch the challah and make it tumah. Why not? The Gemara will explain too.
So the first case is
the dough was kneaded by the Amaret. The gabel can't get involved at that point because it's already tamei, and then he's going to be taking challah out of it. It's going to be tamei, and you're not allowed to do that.
The second case is
you're making the dough to begin with, so therefore you're allowed to do it.
Yeah,
so Amaret is going to have to take challah on his own. It'll be challah tamei. That's all.
Already, exactly.
Tosfos learns differently, by the way. Tosfos learns the difference between the first and the second case is basically because after all, Tosfos says even in the first case, so you still have an alternative. You could make another batch of dough, take challah out of that one on behalf of the first batch, which is tamei. What's the problem with that? So Tosfos says, no, it's rather like this. The Gemara is going to say soon that the only reason the Chachamim were mastered any of this, even the second case, is because the gabel, the kneader, has to make a living. If you don't allow him to do business with tamei aretz, he's going to go bankrupt. When it comes to kneading the whole dough, where he's going to get a substantial size pay for that, that will be master, Mishum Kedei Chayev, so he can make a living. When it's only that the Am HaAretz is coming to him, telling him to take challah, where he's going to pay him a couple of cents for it, that already, we're not going to be master. Yeah, exactly. Okay. Continues the Braisa. The Ein Oisin Trumas Zeis V'Tara, by the same token, you're not allowed to take Truma from the Am HaAretz's olives, V'Tara. Same idea, the Am HaAretz has already processed his olives. You already put them in a pile, getting them ready to go and press them to make oil. So now you're not allowed to, Chavur is not allowed to come in at that point and take the Truma, which supposedly will be Tahor, because it won't be Tahor at that point. The olives have already been, piled together, liquid is already oozing out of them, and you want that liquid because it helps soften them and it helps make them more oil be able to be pressed out of them. Therefore, the mukshel kabel truma, the amar has touched them, they became tamei. Again, you're taking truma; it's not going to be tar anymore. It's going to be tamei, and again, you're not allowed to do that. Aval oisin zeis of chulav batara, but you're allowed to process the olives to begin with. Batara, same idea. In other words, the Amaret just picked the olives, at which point they're not mukshel lekabel tumah, and then he gave them to you to do the initial, to do all the processing. And then you can take the tumah from it. Then you can take the tumah out of it. You put it in the chaver's kevi. Then when Amaret comes to pick up all the olives, and he can take both of them, the remainder, which is chulin, and the portion that you set aside as truma. But in a choshesh, you don't have to worry that the Am HaAretz is going to make the truma tamei.
But it's only done already.
But the time am I, and what's the reason? Why are we making it like this and saying we're not worried that it's going to touch it? Mishum kedei omer Rabbi Yechanan, mishum kedei chayev de gabel, mishum kedei chayev de bada, because you want the kneader or the olive presser to be able to make a living. So you have to be able to do business without an artist as well.
It's not necessarily a tumor.
No, we're going to get to how we avoid the matter of tumor. We're going to get to it in a few lines. Wait. So now we need both cases. Why do we need to be told about a case of dough and a kneader and a case of olives and an olive processor? We need both of them. Because if the Braitha had only told us about the case of the gabol of the kneader, you would say Mishum Dula Nafish Agre. Okay, the fact of the matter is he doesn't get paid much in the first place. People don't pay him very much for kneading dough or taking challah. So therefore he needs anything he can get. So maybe you would say therefore you give him a heter for a corner case like this. Ava Badad, but somebody who works in an olive press, the Nafish Agre, who gets paid. Right, who makes a comfortable living?
Badad
is the one who works in a Beis Abad, in an olive press. So the Nafish Agri, he gets paid quite a bit. Ava Lo, you would think maybe not. Maybe he can afford to do without the business from Namaret. The Yashmin is Badad. Conversely, if we were only told about the case of the Badad with the olives, you would say Mishum Dele Shchiachle. It's not very common. It's not in a sense of very common. It's not an ongoing thing. There's a season for processing olives. You have that season. You make a lot of money. But the fact of the matter is, then you have to live off that for the rest of the year. It's a seasonal business. Aval gabol de shechle, but a gabol, it's not a seasonal business. It's all year round. Ein maloi, you would think maybe not. If he loses this customer, it's easy enough to find another one. Shechle, therefore, we need both cases. Amamar, so we said, that in the case of the dough, you take out a portion the size of the challah, you put it in this kfisha or anchosa. Again, according to Rashi, it's a worn-out leather flask. According to Tosfos, it's a flat board. And we said, when Amar comes to pick up a dough, he can take the chulin and the shrubah, and the challah, the ene choshesh, and we don't have to worry that he may touch it. And the question is, why not? Why aren't we worried that the Amaret may touch the challah? Yes, at this point, when he picks it up, it's tummy, it's tahor. But as soon as he touches it, it's going to become tummy. Why aren't you worried about that? The Amaret, when you're saying that what you do is you put the challah in a kfisher or an chusa, something which is not able to be makabel tumah. So this way, when the Amaret comes
leather
and picks it up,
wood.
Leather or wood, either worn out leather or flat wood, as the case may be, the challah was on the counter. So therefore, that part wasn't a problem. We're saying, the Braitha had said that then now when the Amaret comes to pick up the whole batch of dough, you can give him the main piece of the dough, which is chulin, and he can do whatever he wants with it. You can give him also the piece of the challah, which he will then give to a kohen. You don't have to worry about him touching it. Now the question is, why not?
No, Kaylee
can't do the kabbal tumah, but he can reach inside the Kaylee and he can reach on the other side of the board and touch it. So Vlechus Dom and Nogaba, why aren't we concerned that he may touch it? The answer is Damun Lay, because what we do is the gabbal, the kneader, the person who kneaded the dough and prepared the challah, told him, he tells him like this, Chazi, pay attention. In Nagaspa, if you touch this challah and make a tome, Hadra Latibla, it will go back to being tebal. So now, one way of looking at it is that it's not true, but we're allowed to tell it to him in order to prevent him from being mitama the challah. The Chassam Sofer says that actually maybe not. You could say it is true. L'chatchila, when the Chachamim gave the gabel permission to do like this, they said, so what is it? He's taking challah as a shliach of the Amaret. His shlichus is only valid if the Amaret keeps the challah tahor. If he makes a tameh, retroactively the shlichus is batal. Then the challah was never properly taken in the first place. So therefore, yes, you can tell him, and he'll be careful about that because he knows he can't eat. He knows he can't eat tevel. He knows after all, he was careful enough to bring it to you to be made the tahara and to take challah from it. He will not worry that now he's going to go and eat it as tevel. So if you tell him that if he touches the challah, it's going to go back to being tevel.
Okay.
That again, whether it's not the case according to most Mefarshim, whether it is the case according to the Chassam Sofer, whatever it is, he'll be careful. That's the question. Why aren't we concerned that maybe he doesn't care? Okay, so the challah will become tameh, it will become tevel again, so what? The answer is hashkalas tekunik ha-machavim. The whole point is, we see that he was trying to get the thing done right. He came to the gabel, who was a chaver, and asked him to prepare the dough and take out the challah for me, so that it'll stay to her. Why should we think that he wouldn't care? Obviously he'll care. So therefore, if you tell him it'll become tevel again, then he won't touch it in the first place. Ichbas is like ichbas. Would you think that he wouldn't care? Yeah, obviously, okay. Omamar, going back to the second part of the Braise, talking about the olives, had said that note in the case where that artist brings you the whole batch of olives to begin with before they're mukshal lekabel truma and asks you to pare them and take out truma from them. So we said note lemenika de truma. You take out a portion, enough for truma. On manicha bekulia shel chaver, you put it in a chaver's keli. When the artist comes to pick up his olives, he can take the main, again, major portion of the olives, which has had truma taken out from it, and which is now, it's not completely whole, because nice, it still has to be taken out, but whatever, it's my at that point, and the portion which is truma, and you don't have to worry that he's going to touch the truma portion. Again, the question is,
it's
two separate containers, yeah. So again, why aren't we worried that the Amaret may touch the truma portion? Now, you could argue in the case of a dough, you have a certain heker. You put it in a keli that's not normally meant for holding dough. Again, according to Rashi, a worn-out leather container. According to Tosafot, a flat board. Either way, it's not something that you usually put a batch of dough on. So therefore, that very fact itself makes him realize there's something unusual going on over here. And that, together with the warning, if you touch it, it'll go back to being tevel, that'll be enough to have him keep his hands off it. But over here, if you're putting it in a chover's keli, how exactly is Amaret supposed to realize that this is something off limits? The answer is the manachle b'klei glolim b'klei avon b'klei adama. No, we don't just mean you put it in any old keli. We mean you put it in a keli that's not makabel tumah. Klei glolim, which means some b'farshim say that glolim means it's made from dried animal dung that's made into kelim. Okay, they used to use such things. Other mafarshim say that glolim means marble, whatever it is, not makabel tuma. B'klei avonim or stoneware, which is also not makabel tuma, or b'klei adama or in kalim of unfired earthenware. Adama literally means earth. It's raw earth that hasn't been fired. Either way, those are not makabel tuma. So that itself, again, the same thing as the Kfisha and Anchusa, that itself, that it's in such a keli, will be a reminder to Nama Aretz, there's something unusual going on over here. And then again, and again, once you when you tell him don't touch it, then those two things taken together will be enough to keep him to make sure that he keeps his hands.
Fine, but if you don't put them in,
then you do have to be concerned. That's what we said before. That's what Tosfos had mentioned before. The whole discussion about in a number of places in Shas, we say that the clothes of an Amaret, like the clothes of a Zav, does that mean, though, that we consider him like a Zav? Again, we had the possibility maybe we don't, maybe we're not machmer to consider him like a Zav in that sense. Maybe like a Chila, we're not saying he's a Zav at all, but rather his wife is a Nida and she sits on his clothes, whatever, yeah. In that case, then what are you saying? It has to be a keli that belongs to the chaver. If it's a keli that's not makabel tuma, it could be a keli that belongs to the amaret. The answer is hachi nami karma. That's actually what it means. The kelim shel amaret tora uyin lishtamish ben chaver. We mean it's a keli. It may well belong to the amaret, but it's the kind of keli that a chaver could use because even though it's in the amaret's house, it never became tamei. Therefore, even a chaver could use it for his food without worrying about it being the time of his food.
We know that it never became tamei.
These kinds of things, by definition, can't become... No, not presumed. By definition, klei golem, klei avonim, klei adama can't become tamei.
But it's not can.
Yeah, but we're not talking about that. We're talking about the actual keli itself. So therefore...
Chaver has no sharpness of the film at all. What does he do to film? He never comes in contact with
them. Actually, there were chaverim, in Tonim in particular, since they had to be extra careful with Tumah V'Tahara, there were chaverim in those days who davka used klei avonim or other such kelim in order that they don't ever have problems, potential problems of Tumah V'Tahara in their house. Sure, they themselves, first of all, I mean, you have times when a person is a Zav or a Nidir or what have you, or a Yoldis, and second of all, you know, you can have Tumah Sheret, you can have whatever, you can have Tumah Nes, whatever, so, you know, I've mentioned before the burnt house that they excavated near Shalayim, it was a house that belonged to Koyanim, and they found, they realized the house of Koyanim, because all the utensils in it were stoneware, they were all clay avonim. They would be the kind to do that kind of thing in order to avoid any potential problems with some of the Torah. Yeah, I suppose the clay cheret, the wood, or what have you, yeah. Avonim
can never become...
Right. Mishnah has continued, machzikin yidei akum b'shvi, that you can support... literally, machzikin means sounds like it means that you can help them, the hands of goyim who are working on the land on shemitah. And one says, what do you mean, machzikin? What do you mean you're allowed to help them with it? You're not allowed to hoe the ground, to rake up the ground, together with a goy.
To turn the ground?
Yeah, it means like you take a spade to turn the, yeah. You're not allowed to do that together with a goy v'shviyit, during Shemitah. And by the way, the ein kofman shalom lo over kachavim. Another din, which is also relevant to the end of our Mishnah, you're not allowed to say shalom twice to a goy.
Shemitah?
No, anytime. The Mishnah had said that you say shalom to a goy with nedaka shalom. But to say twice shalom, that already is that thing. You don't need that with nedaka shalom.
With the word shalom?
So that's Rashi over here, Rashi on the Mishnah, and over here learns that yes, we're talking about shalom with the Eidrish's name. We'll talk about when we get to the next part of the Gemara, we'll talk about other possibilities.
Good morning.
Oh, wait. So you're not allowed to help them during Shemitah. What do you mean, Mahzikin? The answer is Lo Tzricha. No, what the Mishnah means, Lememru Lachzuku Bahama. It just means saying to them, good luck with your work or something like that. Be strong. Rabbi Hoda Amalu Lachzuku, for example, Rabbi Hoda would say to them, Achzuku, be strong. Rav Sheshes Amalu Asharta, and Rav Sheshes would say to them, strength, like greetings like that, good work. Tosfos brings an interesting thing from the Yerushalmi, that what it means is something else entirely. What it means is you're allowed to tell the goy, do a good job plowing that field. I plan to buy it from you after Shemitah.
And you say
that's what Tosfos is saying. The goy owns the field. That you're allowed to tell you if a goy is working in this field and he owns this field, you're allowed to tell you the Suzuki is not just telling him, hey, good job. It means do a good job in it because I'm gonna want to buy this field from you after Schmidt. No, it just means it means that you're allowed to say that, even though the goy is working on this land on Shemitah, which on the face of it shouldn't be allowed, since the fact is he's a goy and doesn't have a mitzvah to Shemitah, you're allowed to tell him so the Yerushalmi is learning that the two things go together. Machzikin and Shem Mishalim go together. Not like we learned when we learned the Mishnah that they're two separate things. You're allowed to be machzikin and separately you're allowed to say Shalom. No, it's one thing. You're allowed to say to them, You're allowed to tell them do a good job with this field.
Can you
tell Shabbos?
Yes,
it's Shabbos.
On Shabbos,
you
tell the court, do something,
but
pick it up
for
Shabbos.
No,
I'm here.
So there is a bit of a discussion about it. Although I don't remember clearly all the details actually, but there is some discussion about it. But one thing is that we learned earlier in the Masechta, and we learned here and there in Shach, the whole issue: when a goy owns land in Eretz Yisrael, does it now not have the dinim of truma and meiser and shviyas and so forth? If it doesn't, if we take the view that it doesn't, then he's not doing anything, which is also right now. But therefore, you're allowed to tell him that I want you to do as good a job as possible, and it'll benefit me afterwards because I'll buy it from you. As opposed to Shabbos, where, okay, the goy himself is allowed to do malach on Shabbos, but he'll have to do it for you.
The land has to rest, not your land.
Yes, but it says Sheshon and Shizra Sodecha, whatever, it's a machlokus in many places. Sodecha means your field. So, whatever, it's a machlokus in many places in Shabbos, whether a goy has kinyan there to Israel to take off the dinim. Maybe there is, yeah. Okay, whatever, we've discussed it in places, yeah. And who said a ger doesn't have Kenyan? He doesn't have a permanent place in Eretz Yisrael, but he can still buy land temporarily. Okay. The ein kofman shalom l'orik chavim. The Braita said that you don't repeat shalom to a guy. So Rav Chista makdim b'yav lo shlomo. Rav Chista would initiate the greeting to them, because like this, if they greeted him first, then he might feel obligated to reply twice. Which we just said you're not allowed to do that. He'll say shalom, shalom.
They say
shalom aleichem. He might answer shalom, shalom, because that was the expected thing to do. Like this, if he initiates the greeting, he can say shalom once, they can reply twice. That's not his problem. Rav Kahana would say shalom to the master, Now, what does that mean? Rashi says it means he wasn't really, even though it's seemingly he's addressing the goy, really he's addressing his Rebbe. He's thinking that I'm saying shalom to my Rebbe. Tosfos says, wait a minute, that's Gnevus Das, that you're pretending like you're saying to him, and really you're not. But Tosfos just says, no, he said shalom alamar rather than having to say twice shalom, like this one. He says shalom, and the Poroshim explain what the one possibility, maybe what Tosfos means. If you say shalom alamar, then the guy will be flattered enough that you don't have to tell him twice shalom. But then that way you'll get away with that. By the way, as far as this business of twice shalom, so Rashi is saying the vote is shalom is the name of the Eivishter. Even to tell it once to a guy ought to be a problem. Okay, Dakar Shalom, we're going to allow it. But to say twice is more than you need. There are other Mephoshim who say the reason is because if you say twice a Shalom or any kind of greeting to him, it makes you too much of a closeness with the guy. There still has to be a certain distance between a Yid and a guy. And according to that, it would mean even if you say hello, hello, or whatever, it's still, yeah. B'sholem b'shloimim, the Mishnah had said that you can ask after their welfare, if they have a shalom. So the question is, hashtag zukim ha'zukinen, if we're saying even that before we said that, for example, they're working during Shemitah, and you can tell them, good job, how much more so than b'sholem b'shloimim? Why does the Mishnah have to tell us? Yes, but the Mishnah only has to tell us about even if it's a chag over there, even if it's a goyish holiday. Now we know, the Mishnah says... The Mishnah tells us that the first paragraph of Avodah Zarah, that there's various rules and regulations about what kind of business you're allowed to do with goyim on the days of their pagan holidays and the days before and after it. And in a lot of that, the concern is because the goy is going to be so happy with it that then he's going to go and thank his idol, and therefore you cause that a goy is now doing more of worship of Avodah Zarah.
Yeah.
That's the point. You might have thought that he might. The chiddush is the Mishnah is telling us that when you're shoyim, when you're asking after their welfare, that's not something that they're going to go and thank the Avodah Zarah for.
Hey.
But it's not likely. You don't have to worry about it.
But giving a shalom,
it's
such a good move that
we're going to go. Yeah. D'tanya, as in fact we learn in a braisa, well, you can't decide on the basis, a person is not allowed to go into a goy's house on the day of his holiday to give him shalom, because then you're showing that he's really important.
You know,
that, you know when their holidays are. Come on, you look on a calendar. Whatever. I mean, in every society, you know when the major goyish holidays are. There is, by the way, I mean, there's a whole other question to what extent this applies to goyim nowadays and their holidays. When we learn the fact that it is on a bed, we'll get into that.
What about secular
holidays, there's no question about. We're not talking about like July 4th or whatever.
Right.
We're talking about like the equivalent of Exodus or something. Yeah.
Well, that's
the question. To what extent? I mean, for example, the Rambam holds that Christians are heard of it as all. The Rambam says the rules that the Gemara talks about over there about not doing business with goyim apply every Sunday to goyim.
What about
to Christians?
Christians, they got to pay for every day of the year.
Well, okay, right.
I mean, they don't follow, but potentially they could.
Fine. Okay. So. Besides that, I mean, you know, there's a Gemara someplace that says that I think in the city of Damascus they had the same kind of thing. They had one idol for every day of the year. But you know, okay, but there's still certain days that are set aside as like their special holidays for them.
Islam?
Yeah, this is long before Islam. This is even Christianity was only just getting started. But anyway, yeah.
You don't want
to
be any
guest,
even in Islam.
Yeah. Okay. No, anyway, continue. Continue. You're not allowed to go into an Ovid Chachamim's house on the day of his holiday, the Yitin Lashalim, and greet him with Shalim, because then that's showing you really consider him such an important person. That's something he may now go to his temple and thank his God for. But if you see him in the marketplace, then you can say hello to him like in an offhanded way and distracted way, kind of. The suffered offer, like when sort of like this, like not like, you know, over COVID rush, like a seriousness. You're not making a festive thing out of it.
But you're not returning talk to him.
Same thing though, but the point is that the Sholem B'Shloim, that's what the mission had said, that you're allowed to ask after their welfare discreetly, sort of, yeah. Speaking of giving shalom to somebody, the Gemara tells a story. Rav Huna and Rav Chista have a yasvi. Rav Huna and Rav Chista one time were sitting together. Cholik was a gneva, and gneva passed by. We've learned about gneva a few times in the Masechta already. He was a Tanan Chacham, but he was a Baal Machalikis. We learned earlier in the Masechta that he had a whole Machalikis going on there with Ma'ukva. So, so one of them says to the other, Nekum Kameh Debar Oyin, who will stand up in his honor. He's a Tanan Chacham. Is Ben Torah. And the other one says, should we stand up in honor of somebody who's Cholik on the Chachamim? That's not the kind of person to give Derech Eretz to. As they were talking, he came to them. He says to them, Shlomo Aleichem Malki, Shlomo Aleichem Malki. He says, Shalom Aleichem Kings, Shalom Aleichem Kings. What do you mean kings? Menolach Derabonim Ikru Malachim. Where do you find that the Rabbanon are called kings? Through me, the Torah, this is the Torah personified speaking, through me, kings rule. So therefore, yes, Tamar Chachamim, or Oisik and Torah can be called kings. So where do you get that you say Shalom twice to a king? Before we were saying you answer somebody twice with Shalom. Where do you see that if somebody was considered a king, you say Shalom twice to? How do we know that you say Shalom twice to a king? Ruach would say it in every month of Shabbat. Ruach mosha mosai rosh shalishim. A spirit of Ruach Hakodesh envelops a mosai, the head of the captains. And the pasuk continues. He says l'cha David mincha shalom shalom l'cha v'shalom la'izracha. He says to David, shalom shalom to you and shalom to your helpers. We say month of Shabbat at the end of Yitzchak Machayim. So we see that he said shalom twice to David. When you've tasted something, you have a little chabaisin with us. No, this is what Rabbi Yehuda said in the name of Rab. A person is allowed to taste anything until he feeds his animals, and apparently he never hadn't fed his animals yet. The Eidrisha says, I'll give grass in your fields for your animals. And only then, you eat and drink. You eat and are satisfied.
That's what we have to do. Someone invites you, or you didn't feed your animals,
you go. There is a bit of discussion, halacha, what kind of animals are we talking about? For example, there's no question involved that it applies to animals who depend on you for their food. Does it apply to, let's say, for example, a pet cat or pet dog who can forage for themselves, kind of? It's a question. Also, by the way, an interesting thing, it brings in Sefer Chassidim, this applies to eating. As far as drinking, though, you drink before your animals. Because you find the pasuk says, the Eved says to Moshe, when he told him to speak to the rock, he says, you should give water to the people and to their animals. So the people come before the animals. I saw a cute thing, by the way. Why did Geneva mention these particular things in this connection? Because he wanted to hint to them, you guys are not standing up in my honor. However, you should know that Tamar Chachamim are like kings. A king who's moichel on it can't be moichel on his honor. The same way, I'm not moichel on my honor. You should have stood up for me. What about the thing with the animal? The Gemara tells us in Chagiga that people are like animals in a few ways, one of them being that we eat and drink, just as animals need to eat and drink. On the other hand, in certain ways, people are like malachim. We have das, just like the malachim have das. A person has das, unlike an animal, and therefore you should be respecting the das in me and standing up for me.
Even if he says
that he felt the fact that he's a parga, and obviously that's not what they held, therefore they didn't stand up for him, but yes.
But he came to them, though.
He came to them? Okay, same difference.
Show them respect.
That was Rav Yechonim and Zakkai. So actually, yes, before we have an interesting discussion, how that relates to what we said, that Rav Chista would greet them first rather than them greeting him first.
Because he never greeted them?
No, so how is that so how is that different than Rav Yechonim and Zakkai's thing? A few different answers. One of them being that Rav Chista did this only for somebody who he knows well. Somebody who might greet him first, and then he'd be constrained to answer shalom, shalom. Rabbi Yechonim and Zakkai would do it even to people who didn't know on the street. He would greet them first. That's the difference. A few other answers.
Rabbi Yechonim and Zakkai, by greeting the guy first, he avoids the situation where the guy greets him and the other because of shalom.
Yeah, but that's Rav Chista did that. But that's the point. One possibility is Rav Chista only did that with goyim who he knew already. Rabbi Yechonim and Zakkai would do it with anybody. Even that's what we're saying. Two times, according to Rashi, is saying is using the Avish's name Shalom twice for a guy. Wait, we still have all the basics. We'll try to run through it. But, yeah. You know what? Let's talk afterwards. We've gone on long enough already, and we have a whole moment to cover. Now we're finally getting back to the dinim of gittin after a month of digression. We learned earlier in the Masechta that there's a few different kinds of shliach as far as the get. There's a shliach halacha where the husband appoints somebody to deliver the get to the wife, where then that shliach stands in place of the husband. When he gives the get to the wife, it takes effect. Our parak is going to be talking about a shliach kabbalah, which we haven't really dealt with very much yet, where the wife can appoint a shliach to receive the get on her behalf. As soon as that shliach receives it, then even though it hasn't, then it's considered to take effect. There's actually the Rambam holds that there's a third kind of shliach that can be appointed. That also a woman can appoint. Called a shliach habah, a shliach to bring. We touched on it a little bit, but he says the wife can appoint a shliach havah as well. So how does that work? A number of mafarshim Torah, a number of rishonim talk about different possibilities how the mechanism of that works. There's one of them that Rambam says that essentially a shliach havah is a shliach kabbalah, except that she's adding a condition. You're a shliach kabbalah, however, unlike a regular shliach kabbalah, where the get takes effect as soon as you receive it, here I'm adding a tnai to it that it's only going to take effect when I receive it from you. So therefore, so essentially, it's similar to a shliach kabbalah. The husband has the ability to give it to the shliach, but until he brings it to her, then it hasn't fully taken effect. That's how the Rambam learns it. There's other Rishonim have different understandings of how the mechanism of it works exactly. There's another explanation from the Rashbash, which is that when the woman sends a shliach hava, and the husband voluntarily then goes and gives that shliach to get, effectively what it is the husband has reappointed that person as his own shliach, a shliach halacha, which he has the right to do. And then he brings it to his wife, and it takes effect.
One shliach to two people.
That's the thing. He started out as a shliach of the wife, and now the husband reappointed him as his own shliach.
But he cannot break his shliach until it's completed.
Again, the wife appointed him. According to this way of looking at it, she really only has the right to appoint a shliach kabbalah, a shliach who, as soon as the get is received by him, really, what she gave him is not really considered a valid shlichus at all. Only when he comes to the husband and the husband gives him the get, then at that point the husband has made him a shliach. Mishnah says, "Ha'omer hiskabel get zelishti." If a husband says to the shliach, "Receive this get for my wife," now this is a shliach that he himself appointed. But he's saying his scabble, which is a lashon of Kabbalah, oy holach get zelishti, or he says, bring this get to my wife, take this get to my wife. If he wants to change his mind, he's able to. Because, no, at, well, a, after, the point is, that, the point is, well, yeah, if he wants to change his mind, yeah, we said before, we learned earlier in the Masechta that you have the ability to be mevatel the get, but here we're talking about to be mevatel the shliach. You made the shliach, but ultimately, that shliach is going to be, if it's going to be a shliach for choiv for the woman, because it's a detriment to her to receive a get, as we were talking about earlier in the Masechta, she was in the Zonis, etc. Therefore, ein chavin la'adam ela midaita. You can only create a choiv for a person with their own consent. So yes, if he's giving her the get directly, it doesn't matter. The get can be given against her will. But if you're appointing a shliach to bring it to her, that, we say, the shliach, you don't have the ability to appoint a shliach without her consent. And therefore, the husband has the ability to retract and say, I don't want this person to be shliach anymore. Because that's the point. This is a shliach halacha. So the Mishnah started off with a scabble, which we'll talk about that when we get to the beginning of the Gemara. But for a shliach kabbalah, the husband doesn't have the ability to appoint. A shliach halacha, he has the ability to appoint. But the shliach halacha, because ultimately it's creating a detriment for the woman that she's going to be receiving this get, then the husband still has the ability to take it back. Not a few, even before the get reaches her.
But if he comes to her, the shliach halacha, and
delivers it,
no.
Right, if she says no, then that, that no.
Can refuse, in other words.
No, because the husband has not yet taken away the shliach. No, she can't refuse the get.
I mean,
practically speaking, you could.
She needs consent.
As long as it's still a matter of shlichus, it requires her consent. Once the get is given to her, then the giving of the get itself doesn't require her consent. practically speaking, you can have, like the case we had a month ago with Yidul Bar Eli, who sends a shliach to get to his wife, and she says, come back tomorrow, and then Yidul Bar Eli says, Baruch Atah V'Ameitiv. So practically speaking, you can have that, but in principle, presumably the shliach could have given it to her against her will, and it still would have been valid.
We're talking about the impossible get. He sent the shliach, and then he possibly gets the shliach if he gets to the woman.
No. He's miraculous and calls back the shliach, we're talking about. On the other hand, if the woman says to a shliach, receive my get for me, so she's creating a shliach kabbalah, so the husband cannot retract that because as she made him a shliach. So therefore, as soon as the get reaches that shliach hand, then already the get has taken effect. The husband doesn't have the ability to take it back at that point anymore. Therefore, if the husband says to the shliach, I don't want you to be a shliach kabbalah. I want the get to come to her directly before it's effective. Rather, I'm changing your shlichus. I want to make you my shliach halacha. Then, as long as the get hasn't reached her, he can change his mind because now he's the husband. Shliach halacha. Because the shliach kabbalah, as soon as the shliach receives it, the get takes effect. But if the husband says, "I don't want to give you this. I don't want to give you this as a shliach kabbalah. I want you to be a shliach halacha." Then fine, he can change him into a shliach halacha, and then, like any shliach halacha, the husband can change his mind. Reb Shimon Gamliel says, also, if the woman says, take my get for me, which is also a Lashon Kabbalah, Im Rotzeh Lachzor LaYach, the same thing. If the husband wants to change his mind, he can't, because again, totally Gitti would be the equivalent of saying, Iskabel Gitti, receive my get for me. The Gemara says, Amalei Reb Acha B'Reged of Ivyur L'Reb Ashi. Before we get into the Gemara, actually, Tosfos points out, what's the order of the Perakim over here. Earlier, at the beginning of the fourth paragraph, we started talking about dinim of shlichus. Then we digressed from that because we had about that you can't be mevatel a get that they took an olam. That brought us into a paragraph and a half of things that they took an olam and dakei shalom and so forth. Now that we're done with that, we're getting back to shlichus. And then after that, later on in our paragraph, we're going to talk about a case where somebody tells other people write a get. So then the next paragraph, Misha Ochsa, the seventh paragraph, is also going to be cases where somebody says to people to write a get. And then it continues from there. Rashi actually, it seems, learns differently. Rashi learns that actually the our paragraph is really supposed to come after the next paragraph. It's supposed to be first paragraph, Misha Ochsa, and then our paragraph is Gabel. A few places in Shas like that, we have Rishonim argue on the proper order. Yeah. I'm a little bit of Achav Reger of Hivril Ravashi. What are you saying at the beginning of the Mishnah? Because the woman did not declare the Shliach Kabbalah, the husband is the one who said Hiskabel or Holich. That's why we're saying the husband can change his mind. Which implies that if she had made him a Shliach Kabbalah, that would imply that if he wanted to change his mind, he couldn't. What's the point of the question? Rashi says, the way Marsha learns it, that since we see the case of Holach has to be similar to the case of Iskabel. The case of Iskabel, the husband doesn't have the ability to appoint a Shliach Kabbalah. Therefore, the case of Holach also has to be that, not that the husband doesn't have the right, he has the right to appoint a Shliach Halacha, but it has to be in both cases, whether the husband said Iskabel or whether he said Holach, would amount to that he's declaring a Shliach, and he can't without her consent, because Ein Chavon La'adam Shloim Afanav. So therefore, only because he did that, can he change his mind, implying that if she had declared the shliach, he could. Tosfos learns differently. Tosfos learns that we didn't have to say the case he scabble get del ishti. The husband has no ability to say he scabble in the first place. He only has the ability to say holich. So if the husband says holich, he can change his mind. But if the wife says he scabble, he doesn't have the right to change his mind. Shmamina holich kizochi dami. That would seem to show that when you say to somebody holich, bring something, that's already considered the equivalent of telling them be zoichin on behalf of that person. Now, we discussed back in the first paragraph whether that's the case or not. When you say to somebody, holich, bring this from here to there, so is that the equivalent of saying be zoichin on their behalf or not? From our Mishnah, it seems that yes, because you're saying, when he says holich, that's the equivalent of saying be zoichin. Well, it's not a schos, it's a choyva. Therefore, he has the ability to change his mind. But if he said holich lav kazochi, I mean, why should he have the ability to change his mind?
Still say he's got to get the ishti.
No, but that's the point. According to Rashi, so that's the thing. According to Rashi's explanation, according to Rashi's understanding, the question is, yes, he has the right to say his kabbal, but saying his kabbal is the equivalent of saying holach.
So why do we share a piece both?
So according to Rashi, so there's two different ways of saying it. According to Tosfos, the point of the question is that the Mishnah didn't have to say his kabbal in the first place. His kabbal is not something that the husband can validly say. And if he says his kabbal, then we're saying that it's not really worth anything. It's not really worth anything. Only if she says his kabbal is it worth something. The answer is that's the question. That's the Gemara's question. You know, you could say that saying holach is not necessarily the equivalent of saying zochi. So therefore, even if she had made a shliach kabbalah, and the husband changes it and says, I don't want you to be a shliach kabbalah, be a shliach holacha instead, you could still say that that is something, you could still say that's something valid to do. The iskabel get the ishti tzrichalei. However, the Mishnah does have to tell us the case of iskabel. The sakhlei achamin a hoil baal lab bar shabi shliach kabbalah. Since a husband is not able to make a shliach kabbalah is someone who's acting on behalf of the wife, and it's a shlichus that only she can make. Afagav the mati gita liyodel lo lehavi gita. You would think that if he were to say iskabel get the ishti, even if the get is delivered by this person and reaches the wife, maybe it shouldn't be a valid get, because maybe this wasn't a valid shlichus in the first place. Therefore, what we say is we reinterpret. When the husband said his kabbal, we reinterpret it to mean his kabbal b'cholach. Receive this get from me and bring it to her. Not his kabbal in the sense of as soon as you receive it, it takes effect, because I don't have the ability to do it. Receive it from my hand and bring it to her. So that's what the word kabbal means.
Hard to understand it.
But you do. When you say his kabbal, same thing. His kabbal just means be a receiver, basically. Okay, that's the lashon. Now, I must consider, the Mishnah says, so Isha Sha'ama is Kabbal Ligiti. The Mishnah continued that the woman says, receive my get from me. So she made a Shliach Kabbalah. Im Rotsa Lachso Liyachso. We said that if the husband actually gave the get, wants to change his mind, he can't. My love, Loshna Kabbalah, Loshna Ilocha. On the face of it, doesn't that mean that in both cases, whether the husband said Kabbalah or whether he said Ilocha, if she first declared a shliach of Kabbalah, then he doesn't have the ability to retract afterwards. So therefore, again, holach kezachi dami. As soon as he said to the shliach, holach, it's already he's saying I'm being mezakeh in it for her. But because she declared a shliach of Kabbalah, then that's it. Then takes effect. And then can't be retracted. Yeah. The answer is loya Kabbalah. No, because you could answer that the Mishnah is only telling us the case where she made a shliach Kabbalah, not necessarily where he made a shliach holach. We may not be getting into that. In other words. Tashma, Lefichachim Amalei Abali Efshishit Kabbalah. The Mishnah continues that therefore we said if the husband said, I don't want you to be a Shliach Kabbalah, Ela Holach Fatenla, I want to turn you instead into a Shliach Halacha, you bring this get to her. Imrafa Lachsa Yachsa. The Mishnah says, therefore, if he wants to change his mind, he can change his mind. Because the Shliach Halacha. Taima de Amar Efshi, which implies only because the husband said, I want to change that Shlichos, I want to make you no longer a Shliach Kabbalah and change you into a Shliach Halacha. But implying, but if he didn't say Iepshi, then he can't change his mind once the person received it. Iepshi means I don't want. Shmamina holach kezachi dami. Which would imply, again, that when you say holach, when you say bring this get, then it's already the equivalent of being the zakeh. And then we're trying to prove whether that's the case or not. Answer is Dilma v'helach. Yes, but maybe you could say when Mishnah said that the husband said, I don't want you to be mekabelet ela hoylich v'teinla, and we're discussing the question whether hoylich bring it is considered like zochi. Maybe instead of the word hoylich, maybe it's really supposed to be halach. Halach means here it is, meaning implying. I'm leaving your shlichus the way it is. Holich would mean I'm changing your shlichus from Kabbalah to Halacha. Halach would mean here it is the way that she said. She made you a shlich Kabbalah, I'm not changing that. Halach, here it is. So if he says Halach, if he says I don't want you to be Makabal for her, but Halach, then so that's the thing. If he says Efshi, if he says I don't want you to be a Shliach Kabbalah, then fine, he's taking that away. But if he doesn't say Efshi and he says Halach, then he's saying, in other words, effectively, he's saying, I agree with what she said. You can remain a Shliach Kabbalah. Here it is. You can't prove from that anything about Hoylech, necessarily. You get, so it's Hoylech and Heylech are two different things. The Tosfos says the Gemara is not necessarily changing the words of the Mishnah. There were Amoraim who learned the words of the Mishnah Hoylech, and there were ones who learned Heylech. So you could say that you could argue the Mishnah is saying Hoylech, and if it does, then it means Hoylech Kizachi, that when you say Hoylech is the equivalent of saying Bizoche in it on her behalf, and therefore now I can still change my mind because it's still Choy for her. Or you could argue that it's Heylech, and in that case you can't prove because it has nothing to do with that.
Yeah.
So Gemara starts off with another discussion. Who can be a Shliach Kabbalah, and who can be a Shliach Halacha? Shita. Now, it's obvious that Ish have a Shliach Halacha. It's obvious that a man is able to be a Shliach Halacha. Shekein Baal Moel Get Ishte, because we see that a husband is able to bring a get to his wife. So therefore, if the Shliach Halacha stands in place of the husband, then yes, if the husband is a man, therefore the Shliach Halacha, no question, can be a man. The Isha have a Shliach HaKabbalah. Likewise, we know also that a woman definitely can be a Shliach HaKabbalah. She can Isha HaKabbalah to get to Miyad Baila, because we know a woman receives a get from her husband. So therefore, the Shliach HaKabbalah, who stands in place of the woman, can also be a woman. The question is, Ish the Kabbalah or Isha La'ilach HaMai? Are you allowed to create a man as a Shliach HaKabbalah? So therefore, you have now the husband is giving the get to another man who's standing in the place of the wife. Does that work? Or can a woman be a Shliach HaLacha? Can you have a woman giving a get to another woman to be a valid get? Tashma, come, let's prove. The Mishnah said, "Oh, it's Kabbal get to Leishti, or Helach get to Leishti." The Mishnah started off. He says, receive this get to my wife, or bring this get to my wife. Imrat alach l'yachso. He said he wants to change his mind and retract the Shlichos. He can do that. But for Isha Sh'omri Skabal Ligiti, the Mishnah, if a woman said, receive my get from me, if a woman says to her husband, if a woman says to a shliach, we don't yet know who the shliach is. Wait, but we don't know yet. She says, "Iskabel ligiti, receive my get from me." Imrot alach l'yachso. So then the husband can't retract it because once the shliach receives that get, it's in effect. Now, my lav b'chad shliach. Now, presumably, then we could be talking about that. All of this is talking about one shliach. That, in other words, you have one person that the husband said hoylich. Or the wife said, or that you have one potential person that the husband could say Hoylech to, or his Kabbal, and the wife could say his Kabbal Lee. So it's one person. Ushmam in a kosher, the Kabbalah kosher loyalacha. Which would go to show then that somebody who's kosher with the Shliach Kabbalah is also kosher with the Shliach Halacha. So it could be men or women for both. If we assume it's the same person who conceivably could be made a Shliach Halacha or a Shliach Kabbalah. The Gemara says not necessarily. No, you could argue with two different people. The husband says to a man, "Iskabel oholach." Either way, he's making a shliach halacha. Or the wife says to a woman, "Iskabel ligiti." You can't prove that it's talking about the same person that either the husband or the wife could be addressing.
In two cases.
Hey, Toshma, Alafichachim, Avalai Abali, Efshisha to Kabbalah. We can continue. The Mishnah said that if the husband says to the Shliach Kabbalah, I don't want you to be Makabal for her, I don't want you to be a Shliach Kabbalah, Ela Hoylech Vatenla, rather you bring the get, you be a Shliach Halacha and bring it to her, Imrat Alachso Yachso. So then if the husband wants to change, wants to retract that Shlichos, he can. Now,
he can retract the Shlichos, that means that he accepts the.
No, retract the shlichus means I've taken away. You're no longer a shliach kabbalah because I don't. You're no longer a shliach kabbalah because I don't want that. I'm making you a shliach halacha. Now I'm saying I don't want you to be any kind of shliach. I'm taking the shlichus. Yeah, I'm retracting everything. Now, v'ha'ha'cha d'chad shliach, who necessarily were obviously talking about one person who originally was sent by the woman and now is being resent by the husband, or shmamin ha'kosha l'kabbalah, shmakosha l'alacha. So therefore you see that somebody who is kosher as a shliach kabbalah, namely a woman, is also kosher as a shliach alacha. Shait mina, good, so you can prove that then, you can prove that a woman can also be a shliach alacha. Okay, that takes care of that part. What about the other way around? Ish have a shliach kabbalah. Now, let's talk about Shliach Kabbalah. There's no question a man can be a Shliach Kabbalah, Shekin Av Makabal get the Bitekana. Because we know a father is able to receive a get on behalf of his daughter who's a minor. Doesn't matter. The point is that you still have, yes, he's her Shliach. Of necessity, he's her Shliach. And the Torah is Mezakeh to him. But therefore, you have a case where her husband gives a get to her father. You have a get going from one man to another, and that's a valid Shliach Kabbalah. So we see a man can be a Shliach Kabbalah. Isha lo'ilacha tibo'ilach mai. What about, though, can a woman be a Shliach Halacha? My Amar Amari Toshma, we can prove. We learned earlier in the Masechta, Af Anoshim She'en Nemonas Lamin Meisbai. Like even women who we don't believe to say to a woman that her husband is dead. We learned the five women that are potential rivals of her or whatever, or otherwise have potential enmity with her, and therefore they may try to be messing her up. Nemonas Lahabias Gita. They're allowed. They're able to bring her get. Lahasa Halacha. Now in that case, we're talking a Shleach Halacha. So we see women can be a Shleach Halacha.
Even though it is the ones that are not
trusted. Yeah. Amar Rav Ashi, now, actually, we can see it from the Sefer of that same Mishnah. Dichotani Sefer, because that Mishnah continues. Ha'isha Atzman V'yaz Gita. A woman can bring her own get. We discussed the circumstances over there where the husband makes her herself a Shliach HaLacha. He says, you bring the get, and then it's only going to be effective when you come in front of this Beis Din. We discussed all the various nuances of how that can exactly be. Uvabach takes your chalimim from sheets, your chalimim from a nechtim, from a nechtim. As long as she says, if it's coming between our Yisrael and Chutzlar, we'll keep them by halacha. And we explained over there that the case was she was a Shleach HaLacha. So let me know that proves that a woman can be a Shleach HaLacha. As we said, yeah, that we said a Shleach, we said at the very beginning of the Masechta, the Chachamim believed the Shleach HaLacha, even though it's only one person, as if they were two Edim, that when they say, we can accept it.
A woman?
Even a woman, and even needs five women, yeah. So therefore we see, so the bottom line is we see that a woman can be, that a man can be a Shliach Kabbalah or Shliach Halacha, and a woman can be a Shliach Kabbalah or Shliach Halacha.